Are you guys up for a challenge? Want to think a little bit? Be stretched? Tackle a topic that I don't think I've ever heard ever tackled in church. It's going to make you think. It may make you examine, but that's good for us. So I'm excited about this new series that we're going to start today. And we're going to tackle it over the next three Sundays, and I hope that you'll be able to be with us for all three parts of this series, because each of them builds on the other, and they're all important to understanding this topic. So several years ago, a very dear friend of ours and a dear friend of our church went into the hospital for some very serious surgery to address some cancer in her body. And the day after her surgery, I went down to the hospital to visit her. And when I got to her room, she was asleep. And I have this kind of personal pastoral rule that you never wake anything or anybody that's sleeping. You don't wake a sleeping baby. You don't wake a sleeping dog, especially by surprise. You don't wake a sleeping bear. And you don't wake a sleeping patient in the hospital, because if you've ever been in that circumstance, you know that sleep is a rare luxury when you're in the hospital, because there's always people coming in and poking and prodding, asking you questions and doing another test. And so I was just going to let her sleep. And so I was looking for a piece of paper and a pen or pencil just so I could write her a quick note, let her know that I'd been there and that we were praying for her. And I was standing at that little bedside a table where they put meals, and I was writing this note, and she didn't move an inch, and she didn't open her eyes, and she said, "Paul, if you ever tell anybody that you've seen me like this, I will kill you." Just being funny or dead serious? You see, if you know this woman, she is the consummate professional. She is the type of person that has it all together all the time. She's dressed to the nines. Her makeup is meticulously applied. Her hair carefully done. Her shoes immaculate. She's incredibly courageous and confident. She will say whatever comes to her mind to whoever she might be speaking. She never lets you see her sweat. And so she was saying to me, in humor, I think, "Paul, don't you ever let somebody know that you've seen me like this in my post-operative, hair a mess, makeup absent, puffy-faced, wrinkled bedclothes. Don't you ever let them know that you've seen me like this." You know, almost all my life, specifically since the time I was a teenager, of course, I've always been interested in human behavior. Human behavior fascinates me. I'm always intrigued with not only what we do, but why we do it. And so I've loved reading books about human behavior. I love watching documentaries about human behavior. If a movie is sort of built around a script that has to do with human behavior, I love that kind of movie. I love research about human behavior. I love discussions and debates about human behavior. And I really, really love to study when social scientists create different experiments in order to observe and learn lessons about human behavior. I'm fascinated by human behavior, which works out perfectly, because my particular career path has given me a front row seat on human behavior in one of the best laboratories of human behavior that you could imagine, and that's church. Church is full of human behavior. I mean, just try to change something. If you've done something 2 weeks in a row, you better do that for the rest of history, or you're going to get human behavior. Just say or do something that somebody disagrees with. What's the chances of a pastor ever doing that? And you're going to get human behavior. Try transitioning a staff member either onto your team or off the team, and you're going to get a lot of human behavior. Anything to do with music? you're going to get human behavior. Ask people to sit near the front of the auditorium in the center of the aisles, and you're going to get human behavior. Ask people to give money, volunteer their time, and you're going to get human behavior. Ask people for 21 years, ask people if they would park in the farthest parking spots so that our guests have the ones closest to the building when they arrive, and you're going to get human behavior for 21 years. The church is all about a study of human behavior. So for 21 years, I've been asking this question, why is this work so difficult? Why is it that this thing that we're trying to do as a church, why is it so challenging? Now, don't get me wrong. 21 years, I have a lot to be grateful for. I've had a tremendous amount of encouragement and support and affirmation and cooperation and respect. But we have had challenging days of trying to get a church to do what the church is to do. And I've been confused. I've laid in bed at night staring at the ceiling more times than not, wondering, why is this so hard? And initially, I thought it was because of faith. That faith is difficult. This is an idea and a concept and a construct of life. Most people have a really challenging time applying or understanding faith because we have such a misinformed view of it. Faith is simply about trust. But we've made it so mysterious and so religious and so super spiritual that a lot of people don't understand how faith works. And so for years I thought, well, that's why it's hard. It's just that it's hard to talk about faith because you can't see God and you can't touch God and you can't hear God. And so faith is hard for people. But ultimately I decided that wasn't it. And probably about, 8 or 10 years ago, I decided it was something else. And the more I've watched it and the more I've studied it, the more convinced I've become that this is an issue. This is a problem. This is a reality that creates a challenge. Now, before I tell you what it is, some of you, you're going to disagree. And that's fine. You may not arrive at the same conclusion that I've arrived at. And some of you, you're not going to like it. You may either literally or figuratively cross your arms and go, no, that's not my deal. And all I'm going to ask is that you give me a few minutes to explain myself. Can we do that? Here's what I think is one of the most difficult challenges that we face, both as a church and as a community, certainly as a society. It's image. It's this way that we portray ourselves. It's this way that we behave so that other people encounter us and other people interpret us and other people see us a certain way. And we work really, really hard to create a great image. Now, this really shouldn't surprise us because of the particular area that we live in. Fair Oaks Ranch, Bernie, Leon Springs, Bulverde. This is very, very powerful in this particular area. But don't take it personal, because I'm sure that we would find the same if we went to Southern California. or if we went to Chicago in the greater Midwest, if we went to New York City and the Eastern Seaboard, if we went to the great Southeast from Atlanta to Miami, we'd find that image is a thing. I mean, just be honest to this area, like our neighborhood, our community. And here's some things that are typical of this area. It's inhabited by a lot of wealthy people. Now, what's so funny about this area that I've been observing for 22 years now is that people who are very wealthy in this area will say, oh, I'm not that wealthy. But when you take our lifestyles and our income and our experience in comparison to the rest of the world, most anywhere else in the world, we are a very wealthy people. If you have more than one vehicle, if you have more than one computer, if you have a pantry, if you have a freezer out in the garage, if you have an attic that's full, then we are a very wealthy people. In fact, most of us, we throw away more food in a day than some people see in a week or a month. Being wealthy tends to give itself toward the importance of image. Here's another thing about our area. We're a very professional area. People with executive-level kinds of careers, both in the military as well as in the marketplace. Very professional sort of neighborhood. A very educated area. College degrees and advanced degrees are pretty popular in this area, pretty common. This area is very accomplished. It's so interesting. This is one of the things I love about my job is I get to talk to people who've done so many fascinating things. From recreation to careers to all sorts of personal ambitions that they've been able to achieve. It's just fascinating the amount of accomplishment in this area. We live in a very active area. People are very involved in all sorts of things, hunting and fishing and sports and all sorts of different social activity. It's a very active, engaged group. And this right here provides for a lot of value to creating or sustaining a certain impression. Military USA. It's a very patriotic area. And this is important. It runs deep in the heart and the blood of a lot of people because of their connections to our military. And then, you guys ready? You ready? Come on. We'll just have some fun here because I'm just trying to lighten the mood here a little bit. But Texan. Texan is a thing. You know, I was born a Yankee, but I got to Texas as quickly as I could. And one of the things that I love about Texas, seriously, I love about Texans, is what I call swagger. Texans just have a pride and a confidence and a way about them that is inherent in our culture as residents of the great state of Texas. And I'm just wanting us to be aware that a list like this lends itself to the importance of image. A facade, of a wall, where we work so hard to create an impression for other people. Here's the deal about us as human beings. These two things are true. All of us know the truth about ourselves. Why? Because we live with ourselves. We're with ourselves every day. Every minute of the day, we're with us. And we know what we really think, although we may not always say it. We know what we really think. We always know what we would like to say, but we may not. But we would sure like to say it. And we all know what we do when we're alone and nobody else is around. We know the truth about ourselves, and we all have a way that we want others to see us. And unfortunately, is the way that we want other people to see us is not always the truth about us. This is where image comes in. Now, image takes all sorts of different expressions. As different as all of us are in the room, we may have all different images that we're trying to portray or present to others. And here's a list of just some of the common ways that people try to present themselves. Very successful. I want people to perceive me as very successful, and therefore I will live a certain way of life in order to be portrayed that way. Intelligent, I want people to think I'm very smart. Wealthy, I want people to think that I have a lot of money. Several years ago, a gentleman came into my office to meet, started to tell me a little bit about what was going on in his marriage, and it was such a mess. And he started describing some of the reasons why his marriage was in such turmoil. And one of the reasons for it was because of the enormous amount of debt that they were in. Now, I like to think I have a pretty good poker face. I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years. I've heard everything. You can't shock me anymore, from sexual behavior to personal dysfunction. I've seen and heard everything. But when this gentleman told me how much debt he and his wife were in just on their credit cards, inside of me, I went like, oh my gosh, how do you even do that? But here's what nobody in town knows. That they were so enormously in debt, but they lived in one of the most beautiful houses in the neighborhood. They drive brand new cars. They go on exotic vacations. They do and have everything. That was the image that they wanted everybody to understand so they could keep up with everybody else. Meanwhile, they were literally drowning in debt, and it destroyed their marriage. Sometimes some people, I just want to be the funny guy. I'm always the one who has a joke. I don't want anything to get too serious, so I project this image of humorous. Pertaining to our appearance, I'm the beautiful one, I'm the handsome one, and I have to maintain the image at all times. I'm the adventurous one, always doing the crazy stuff that nobody else does. I'm the super mom. I'm the super dad. I do everything for the kids. I do everything with the kids. I'm really fit and active and healthy. That's an image. Sometimes. Compassionate. Some people project the image of being so compassionate for people who are needy or in need. Of a particular person in my life who, this is all people know about them. And yet, if you get too close to them, what you discover is that they're most critical, judgmental, harsh, unhappy person that you've ever met. How does that live together? Confident, chill, just laid back, nothing bothers me, accomplished, the person who has it all together, the tough guy. This is popular among men. To present an image like I've got it all together and nothing fazes me and you can't hurt me. I'm a steel wall. You can't get through. I'm tough. Independent. The church is rife with an image that's presented as I'm spiritual. I know so much about the Bible. I know so much about my faith. I've been doing this for so long. I walk so close to God. But it's not always the truth. We project an image in order to protect the truth. We don't want people to really know what's going on in our life. The image we project for others to see is created to hide the truth about what we don't want others to know about us. Does this make sense? I'm not asking you to agree that you have an image issue. I'm just asking you to understand that it's a very dangerous reality in far too many lives. It's very interesting how it works. So we have the truth, we have reality. This is what we know to be true about ourselves, but we project this image. And here's what I want us to understand. You have reality, and then you have the image that we present. And the further our image gets away from our reality, the more dangerous it is to our life. The more risk we place ourselves in when our reality is very different from our image, or our image is very different from our reality. And this space between reality and image, you know what you call it? Do you want to know? Do you really want to know what we call the gap between reality and image? We call it deceit. Yeah, you said, yeah, maybe I didn't want to know that. It's deceit. Essentially, the difference between reality and the image we create is just one big lie, with the hope of deceiving our closest friends and family from really knowing the truth about us. We become deceivers. And here's the really unfortunate part of that, is that God created us in a way that our soul was never designed to live in that kind of an atmosphere. The very best that God has put within us was never designed to live under the burden of deceit. And therefore, when we live in this sort of deceit, what it creates in us is guilt and shame and frustration and regret and fear. We end up living with these kinds of feelings as the predominant way of how we experience our life, because the whole time we're trying to present ourselves in a way that's not true. And that deceit just gives way to living our lives feeling guilty about everything, or ashamed about who we are, or frustrated that we can't be more honest to ourselves, or living with regret that nobody really knows us. But it doesn't have to be like that. That's what I want us to understand. We don't have to live our lives this way. There's a different idea, and that is that we bring our image into closer conformity to the truth, the reality of who we are. We don't have to pretend. We don't have to create facade. We don't have to build a wall. We just bring reality and our image together. And there's a word for that. And it's honesty. That we can start living our lives more honestly. And I probably wouldn't surprise you to tell you that God wired our soul to live in an atmosphere that is honest, where we don't have to pretend, and we don't have to deceive, and we don't have to protect. We're just honest with who we really are. And here's how that works for us. That ends up creating things like peace. I don't have to pretend today. I can just be me. I can actually experience like happiness, a joy. Like I can be delighted in my soul because I'm not pretending all the time. I can know a whole new confidence. I don't have to worry about being found out. I can actually have a certain excitement about life and all of the opportunities because I don't have to keep up an image. And here's one of the best ones, is I can actually enjoy a sense of freedom about my life. You want to know the saddest part about all this? The saddest part of maintaining an image that's vastly different from the realities of our life is that every single day, the minute the alarm clock goes off and you wake up and are aware again of a new day, the first feeling that you have is fear. You say, Paul, I don't think that's true. I don't see, you have lived with it for so long that you don't even recognize it anymore. We live in the fear that maybe today's the day that somebody finds out the truth about me. Maybe today's the day that the wall comes crumbling down. Maybe today's the day that the facade is demolished. Maybe today's the day that the truth is actually revealed about who I am and the lie is exposed. And we live every day from the moment we get up with this fear. I can't afford for somebody to know the truth about me. They would be so disappointed. They would be so put off. They wouldn't like me anymore if they knew the truth about me. And so we live our entire lives in fear. So here's a couple of things that I want us to understand about living an image is maintaining an image is exhausting. Always having to be on, always having to be up, always having to be right, always having to be the smartest person in the room, always having to project some sort of an image of being incredibly wealthy when in fact you're not. And that just gets so exhausting that our soul gets tired of feeling ashamed and guilty and afraid and resentful. And we keep saying, I'm so tired because my job's so busy. Maybe true, but what may be exhausting you down on the soulish level is that you're trying to maintain an image that isn't really true about who we are. Secondly, maintaining an image can be really expensive. This is where I have to live in this kind of house. I have to drive this kind of car. I have to go on these vacations so I can maintain the image. I have to run around with these kinds of people. I have to do these kinds of things. And it gets really, really expensive to maintain the image. Maintaining an image can be really lonely. Because we can't really let people in. They can't get too close to us because if they get too close to us, they might find out the truth about us. So we maintain the image. Meanwhile, we live in a prison that keeps everybody from getting anywhere near us. Here's an interesting quote I ran across preparing for this series. Some people are so poor, all they have is money. They don't have friends. I mean, they don't have really close friends. They may have lots of social acquaintances because that's part of the image. But people who really know them and love them and accept them for who they are, they don't have any of that because I have to keep up appearance. And finally, maintaining an image is crippling. It can literally bring our life to a halt. It can literally cause us to just limp our way through every day of our life in fear of being found out. While busy keeping up our image, we often neglect what really matters, or at least we wear ourselves out trying to do both. See, if you have to maintain the image of wealthy and then you got to go to work a lot, and because you're at work a lot, you can't spend the time that you need to spend with your children. If the image is to be so active and so involved in doing all these adventurous things, you may not have the time or the energy left over to spend with your spouse, the things that really matter, because you're just so busy trying to maintain the image. So the things that truly matter in life, they get neglected and sometimes they get destroyed. So you'd expect I'm the preacher. I ask the question, I wonder what God thinks of this. I wonder if God has anything to say about it. So there's this really interesting concept that we run into, particularly in the New Testament. And it comes out of the most interesting place. It comes out of the Greek theater. Now, this was a long time ago. There wasn't television, and there wasn't radio, and there weren't movie theaters, and there wasn't Netflix and Amazon Prime. So one of the ways that was very popular for people to enjoy entertainment is they would go to the theater. And actors and actresses on a stage would portray a story. And it's interesting that in the Greek theater, because the stadium that people would be in would be so large that some people would be very far away from what was happening on the stage. And so the actors and actresses who portrayed a particular character, and sometimes the same actor would portray multiple characters in the course of a play, they would wear these masks. And archaeologists have actually discovered and collected some of these masks. And what's unique about the mask is that the mask is supersized. It's unusually large in its expression, particularly graphic, much larger than really the size of a human face. But what would happen is the actor or actress would come onto the stage and they'd be wearing this enormous mask so that the people in the farthest reaches of the auditorium or the theater, they could understand what character that was on the stage at that moment. Do you understand? Do you understand? Yes, see, there's a word for that actor wearing the mask. Maybe you've heard of it. It's the word hypocrite. The actor who wears a mask to portray a character was called the hypocrite. So it's interesting, there's this word hypocrite ultimately came into English from the Greek language, and it means an actor or a stage player, but the word hypocrite is actually two Greek words that have been combined together. And when you translate them literally, they mean an interpreter from underneath. What does that mean? Well, when we understand the place of the mask to mark the character which an actor was playing, they interpreted the story from underneath the mask that they hid behind. Did you follow that? That's why over time, as the word hypocrite evolved, it came to represent any person who's wearing a figurative mask and pretending to be someone or something that they're not. So ultimately, to have a certain reality about who we are and yet to present ourselves in a completely different way, that deceit is hypocrisy. And God has some things to say about the danger of hypocrisy. Here's just a couple of passages of scripture in Proverbs chapter 11, which is all about, you know, living life wisely. The integrity of the upright guides them. This idea of doing the right thing in a situation, it guides this person who is perceived as being responsible and mature and upright in his life. But the unfaithful are destroyed by their what? Their duplicity comes back and haunts them. It has consequences when we live two different lives. Jesus had some very strong words to the religious leaders of his day. He says, "Woe to you, teachers of the law, you Pharisees, you hypocrites." Look at this. You're like whitewashed tombs. That means this is the place where we bury the dead, but we paint it white so that it has a pleasant appearance, which looks beautiful on the outside, but on the inside, the truth about the teachers of the law and the Pharisees inside, you're full of bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside, you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside, you're full of hypocrisy and a wickedness that God finds revolting. Those are strong words of Jesus about this idea of hypocrisy. 1 Peter chapter 2, Peter writes this, "Therefore, in light of what he's just taught in the book, rid yourself of all malice and all," what? "Deceit." Get rid of hypocrisy. Don't do that. Don't live that way. Get rid of envy and slander of every kind. And so we have these words like envy and slander. We think, well, yeah, those are wrong. Well, they're grouped with things like hypocrisy and deceit. Get rid of that. And then Ephesians chapter 4, the Apostle Paul writes to the church. He says, each of you, not just some of you, every one of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to your neighbor. There's more than one way to lie. It doesn't always involve words. It just can be the way that we go about living our lives. Paul says, don't do that. Stop that. Most of us, whether you go to church or not, most of us, we don't like when the Bible says, thou shalt not. Or is that just me? And some people, this is their impression of the Bible. Thou shalt not. Stop that. Don't. And we interpret so much of the Bible as thou shalt not because this is our understanding of God. We question God's intentions toward us. But perhaps there's another way to look at thou shalt not. That if we truly understand the nature of God's and his character and his enormous love for us, that maybe, just maybe, thou shalt not is better read, don't hurt yourself. I love you, and the reason I'm asking you not to do this or to behave this way or to live your life this way, the reason I'm asking you to steer clear of this sort of behavior is I just don't want to see you get hurt. The reason I say, please, stay away from sexual immorality outside of the arrangement of marriage is because I don't want to see you get hurt. The reason I ask you don't lie to your neighbors or your friends is because it'll come back and haunt you and it'll complicate your life. I just don't want to see you get hurt. The reason I say, please, be very careful about like alcohol and the abuse of any sort of substance that gets you out of control of yourself. It's not because I want to spoil your fun. I just don't want to see you get hurt. So God is saying to us, don't pretend. Don't live a life that's different than who you really are, because in the end, you'll get hurt. You'll get hurt waking up every day, living in the fear that maybe today somebody else is going to find out the truth about you. You'll get hurt always living in the backwash of guilt and fear and shame and regret and frustration, and you don't have to live like that. But if you do, you should know you're going to get hurt. There's been a person in my life who I refer to as Mr. Unflappable. I mean, this guy seems to always have it together, and nothing ever seems to faze him. I mean, he just sort of goes through life slow and steady. And it doesn't matter what's happening around him. He's just not fazed by it. And then I had the occasion to be invited behind the wall. And he let his guard down just enough for me to be able to peek over to the inside. And what I found out is he was one of the most anxious people that I've ever met. And every situation, every social circumstance he'd ever find himself in, he was panicked, absolutely terrified, so much so that he was in a battle for his life because suicide seemed like it was the only solution to be able to get away from the fear. Folks, we don't have to live like that. There's a different way to live. There really is. You want to know what it is? Anybody? The alternative to hypocrisy is what we call authenticity. This is bringing the image into conformity with reality and just being who we are. Accepting the reality of the truth and living that way. Now, here's some things that we have to understand about authenticity. It is risky because we don't live in a society, and it breaks my heart, we don't live in churches where people can be true to themselves. We always have to pretend like we have it together all the time for fear that somebody won't like us or accept us or approve of us if they knew the truth. So it's risky to put yourself out there and start being real with who you are, because you might be disapproved or you might be rejected or you might not be thought of in the same way. And yes, there's a risk, but I'll tell you, authenticity is such a better way to live. Because you don't have to live behind a mask in your fear, in your shame, in your guilt, in your frustration, in your regret. It's a much healthier way to live because you're not being eaten from the inside out with the lie that you have to portray that isn't really the truth. And authenticity is so liberating. It's such a better way to be able to wake up the minute the alarm goes off and open your eyes and go, oh, I'm free today. I don't have to pretend. I don't have to be something I'm not. I don't have to live in the fear that somebody's going to find out the truth about me. It's a lot to think about. And I want to think about it some more the next two Sundays. But here's what I want to leave you with today. It's possible, it's possible that in a room of this many people, that there may be a few of you who are sitting here right now and going, nailed it. He's talking about me. The truth is, I'm an actor and I'm living behind a mask and I'm trying to portray something that's really far from the truth about who I am. And maybe there's some people sitting here and saying, I am so tired of having to live like this. I'm exhausted and I just want it to be over. Here's what I have for you. I have Jesus. I have Jesus. He is what you need to be freed from the facade. And I give you his words, not my words, his words. And he says, come to me. All of you who are so worn out and so burdened under the weight of the mask that you have to wear, come to me if you're tired and you're worn out, and I will give you rest. There's something about a relationship with Jesus that he can offer us the peace and the joy and the hope and the excitement and the confidence, a restfulness about our soul. And then he says, take my yoke upon you. It's an image from agriculture of two oxen pulling together under the tool of a yoke. He says, here, align yourself. Let's come alongside of me and learn from me. In other words, Jesus is saying, I have some things to teach you. I have some things that I'd love for you to get. I'd have some things that I would love for you to experience if you would just understand me and my work in your life. Learn from me. For here's the deal. I'm gentle. Your boss may not be gentle. And your neighbors may not be gentle. And all your friends from the club, they may not be gentle. For I am gentle and I'm humble in heart. And you will find rest for your soul. Down in the deepest part of your, you will find rest. For my yoke is easy and my burden, in comparison, it's very light. You won't have trouble carrying it because I'll carry it with you. But there's some things that you'll have to learn from me about how to see yourself and how to see your world and how to see your truth. If you'll learn from Jesus, you can take off the mask and you can be done with that way of life. So I want to ask if you'll do me a favor. I'd like to ask you to bow your head. And I just want to guide you through a prayer. I'm going to give you some words, but you're free to use your words. You don't have to repeat after me. Would you be willing to say some words of confession, like, God, I'm an actor. I wear a mask. I'm a pretender. I work really hard to get people to think some things about me that aren't really true so I can hide from them. Would you be willing to admit your need? Jesus, I'm going to need some help with this. No one's ever pushed me in this direction this far before. I've been working overtime for 40 years to maintain the image. I'm going to need some help here. And then maybe you'd be willing to say, Jesus, to the best of my ability, I'm going to learn from you a new way to live my life. I'm open. I'm going to let you in behind the wall because you're already there behind the wall. But I'm trying to fool you too. But I'm willing to learn. Will you teach me some things that I still don't understand about myself and my soul? And then, finally, would you be willing to say, I'm going to trust you, Jesus, with how I live my life. I'm going to trust that you know more than I do, and you know better than I do. Our Father in heaven, thank you for your outrageous love. Thank you for your eternal grace. Thank you. Thank you for your offer to help us. God, I'm asking that for every one of us, myself included, that you'd help us put down the mask and walk away from the stage and embrace something more authentic. The work at creating an image that reflects who we truly are and all of our mess and our brokenness and our hurt and our dysfunction. Help us to trust you enough to be honest. Help us, Father, to understand that image really isn't everything. And I pray and ask this in the name of Christ, our Lord and our Savior. Amen. Thank you, gang. Appreciate you listening. We'll see you next Sunday.